We were sort of altogether way ahead of them in resources and stability and in standing. I mean, it was only a bit later, you see, that the chaps at, well, in particular at Morgan's, but various of them became sort of too hot to handle. So that our general position wasn't, in fact, greatly impaired by having made, I don't say asses of ourselves, but having done something outwardly damaging to the stock exchange, which wasn't all that damaging.
What would you say had caused its demise? That's the demise of Ariel.
I think it was the failure of the merchant banks to use it in the way that they had said that they intended to.
Why do you think that was the
They
case?
simply, I think that the dealers in their dealing rooms simply found it easier, not necessarily cheaper, but easier to deal with brokers than with Ariel.
How did you feel, apart from the issue of commissions, about the service that you were getting from the stock exchange?
I think most people grumbled, but I think they'd have grumbled anyway, because if they recommended you to buy something and it didn't go up as much, you grumbled at that, and if it fell, you grumbled. I mean, I think that there was always a grumble against stockbrokers, partly justified because the stockbrokers wanted to sell something. That's how they lived, so they wanted you to buy it. Or for you to sell something which they were going to sell. But they wanted you to do something. And of course, quite often, the best thing to do is to do nothing.
Had this always been the case, or was it
Yes, I think so.
emerging as a problem, as an issue during
No,
the 70s?
I think this was always the case. And of course, stockbroking profits were feast or famine. I mean, they expected to have two very good years, followed by three very bad ones. And none of the firms had any capital, tiny capital they had. So they'd got nothing to rest on except the profitability of the firm during the year. And then there would be, if it was very profitable, there was a huge bonus. Not so profitable, no bonus.
But as far as the actual trading was concerned, you found you were able to do what you wanted to do on the stock exchange.
Not always, no. If it was very big stuff, we'd got to go to the big institutions and talk to Barings and Rothschilds and the Prue and the Pearl and the Legal and General. That was the sort of standard stuff. And maybe the odd pension fund coming up to get the business done. And the stock exchange could not have handled it.
Now, what kind of business would that be, an issue or a
It,
placement?
either an issue or some very big seller of something.
Now, how often would that happen?
Not often, not often. Two or three times a year. Not often. Usually the amounts were quite handleable.
One thing the jobbers used to get angry about was the breaking of a large order in
Oh,
smaller
yes.
chunks.
Oh, yes. They wanted the lot always. And they didn't at all like one going to the Prue and the Pearl, etc. Well, the stock exchange didn't like that either. The stockbrokers didn't like it, or the jobbers, because they wanted to handle, naturally, they wanted to handle the whole thing because they got a commission on the lot. Very understandable. What we wanted to do was to do the business.
What about the issue of breaking up the same order into smaller chunks and sending different people into the market?
Well, I think that myself was disastrous. I mean, I think it's the one way to send the price down. We had a friend whose brother went and died on a Saturday. And if you die on a Saturday, you can choose your date for death duties, either the Friday or the Monday. And he rang me up and said, what did I think was the best way of getting a share price down on Monday morning in a share that hadn't got a frightfully good market anyway? And I said, well, you get hold of one broker to go in with 20,000 shares first thing to sell. And about a quarter of an hour later, you send another broker in with 10,000 shares to sell. And half an hour later, you send a broker in with 50,000 shares to sell. And you then employ about six more brokers with about 30 to 40,000 shares each to sell. And I think that ought to wreck the price by the end of the day, which he did, and it did. It's what frightened jobbers always was different brokers coming in with different parcels of the same share, and nothing put the price down faster. So I regard the idea of sending in half a dozen fellows with parcels, either to buy or sell, as foolish.
Did you feel you could, as a merchant bank, influence the price of a stock?
Not really. One could say what one liked, and quite often you could buy. We did over Stewart's and Lloyd's, when Stewart's and Lloyd's was denationalised, and it was a flop. Everybody thought it was going to be a great success, and the whole future programme depended on Stewart's and Lloyd's being a success, and it was Thrupp's premium or something. So we got together a syndicate that agreed, Rowan Pitman with the principal brokers, that Arthur Andersen would go into the market and bid sixpence premium for all the shares that anybody wanted to sell. Take anything, any quantity. Which was just above the opening premium, the jobber's opening premium of threepence. And it being Rowan Pitman and it being known that we were the lead bank behind it, this was taken seriously. And we'd got together this syndicate late on the Saturday night, when most people had gone home, of two or three insurance companies, ourselves, which was Helbert Wagg in those days, Barings, Morgans, and Lazards, I think it was, about five of us. And at the end of the day, with hardly buying any shares at all, they were a shilling premium. And the next day, they were two bob premium. And it was partly bluff and partly the fact it was a very good share, Stewart's and Lloyd's, and brought it off. This was copied in degree for the BP issue. It was a case of giving confidence and having the money behind you.
But this was not something that was done frequently.
Once in 5 years, if that.
Let me begin to ask you a few concluding questions, again, drifting back to the jobbers. In your experience in the city, did you ever know of cases where fund managers would occasionally speak to the jobbers directly? This was, of course, not in the spirit of single capacity.
Right. I'm sure they did. Fund managers who became very uppity and all the rest of it were very happy to have lunch with jobbers and brokers and bankers and wouldn't have regarded any of the old taboos as applying to them. Or rather. And some of them, of course, had a poor reputation, some of the fund managers, from the financial aspect.
Was this ever a concern to you as a person on the board?
Well, we had to keep an eye on it. We were a bit concerned with one or two chaps. And of course, it wasn't unusual. I mean, there was a general manager of the Midland Bank who was well known when there was a good issue going. His wife, a wise broker, offered some underwriting to his wife in the days when underwriting commission was not subject to tax. So one had always been aware that there was a tendency, or a risk of somebody wanting to feather their own nest in any of the businesses. We had a fellow who got the sack who bought things in the morning, and if they went up, he kept them, and if they didn't, somebody else got them. There was always, bees and honey.
I've been told that the investment, the person who managed the pension fund for BP, which I believe you're a director for,
yes,
enjoyed, was known occasionally to speak directly with the jobbers, purely yes. because he preferred doing things that way, I'm not sure for his own would. Personal.
No, I'm sure gain. He would. It's a free world. There's nothing to stop anybody. Butterfield. Nothing to stop anybody ringing up anybody, and I'm sure he was a very opinionated, tough man, and he wouldn't have taken no from anybody. You know, if they'd told him you mustn't do this, he wouldn't have taken any notice. I'm sure lots of them did.
Did you ever think about single capacity, the separation of capacities?
Not in my time. Mm. Not in my. It hadn't come to the fore at all in my time. I'm doubtful about it. I mean, a jobber is a very different animal to a broker. And now they're having to be both. Mm.
Did you feel there was any strengths in the old method of separating the functions in the stock exchange?
Well, I think that the jobbers did fulfil, well, they, no question about it, for many years, a very useful function in, they were the market and were dealing with a couple of hundred firms of stockbrokers. So that when a broker had a selling order, the jobber knew a huge number of brokers who came to him, and in due course the business was done, or the jobber took the whole risk just on his book straight away. It's very difficult to tell. I suspect there were many occasions when dealing that way got a better price for the seller than the present method.
Finally, again, reviewing your long experience of the city, where would you say the jobbing firms as partnerships fitted into the scale of things in the city? Were they, would they have ranked with the merchant banks? Would you have simply classed them along with the brokers as fairly small outfits?
Yes.
Did they have any clout? That's what I'm getting at, I
yes.
suppose.
No. Except one or two personally liked Dick Wilkins, but the smaller jobber firms had absolutely no clout at all. They lived on the backs of the bigger jobber firms. They really had no clout in the City of London at all. Mm. They were useful part of the machine, but clout, no.
You mentioned again Dick Wilkins and maybe one or two others.
I'm trying to think of their names, but there were jolly few of them.
Yes. What would that have consisted of? Their contacts with people like?
I think their personal extraordinary shrewdness of knowing the people they were dealing with, knowing the stocks they were dealing in, and I think they just were frightfully shrewd, and they would have done very well in whatever business they'd gone into. They mostly had started at the bottom of some firm or other and got up just through ability, and they had that particular ability and usually very little other ability.
Well, I think we can finish on that note. Thank you very much.